Thank you very much. Thank you. I'm really happy and proud to be here in Vancouver. Believe me, I'm really happy because
it's a beautiful city.
I'm not talking just about the city, but about people. People are, I think, more important than the architecture of cities. But I'm really happy to see brave and courageous lawyers, such lawyers of British Civil Liberties Association and activists, like the activists of No One Is Illegal. Because without lawyers, courageous lawyers and brave activists, I don't think that I could do what I have done during those last 6 years. Perhaps today I would be in a small cell in Morocco. So it's why I'm really happy to see this combination of activism and lawyers is really very important. And I just saw it in Quebec. And this is the first time in this Canadian tour I can see the same combination between activism and lawyers, and I'm really happy to see it, believe me. So I will start my telling you my story, because I think it's really important to share with you this Kafkaesque story since 2003. I can talk to you about the law, about the Supreme Court decision. You know, English is my third language. I'm a French teacher. So I will do my best to express myself tonight, today. If I don't find my words in English, I will say it in French, and Fernand from the Coalition Justice for Israel will help translate to me to English, okay? Thank you. So I will start by my arrival in Canada. In 1995, my father, my mother, my sister and me decided to immigrate to Canada. And for us, Canada was American dream, but in French. So the American dream now became nightmare, like you can see. And when we met with the Canadian immigration agent in the Canada embassy in Morocco, in Rabat, in the capital, she told my father, perhaps you are going to regret your choice to go to Canada. Morocco is a beautiful country. There is no snow, no winter, and you are from the middle class, and you have your own house, you have your own business, your wife is working, you have your children in the university, and why you want to go to Canada? My father insisted, and now he told me, she advised me about the winter, about the snow, about the jobs, but she never talked to me about thesis. And when we arrived in Canada in 1995, I finished my bachelor degree in 2 years in University of Montreal. And for me, life was normal like any young Canadians. I was doing lots of martial arts, sports, traveling, studying, working part-time. And everything was normal. In 1998, I sponsored my wife from Morocco. And when she came here, we started our life. I was living near my parents' house, and everything was normal. In 2000, my wife asked me to go with her to Morocco to visit her family. And before taking the plane, I was arrested by RCMP's officers, and they asked me to follow them. I followed them in the basements of the airports. And there they checked my luggage, my wallet, everything I have. And one of them, Caporal Duval, he testified after on my behalf in the federal court. He gave me an advice. He told me, look, Adil, I will tell you, don't take this plane. Don't go to Morocco. I told him, why? He told me, because you'll perhaps face some problems there. Problems. So I told him, every year I'm going to Morocco and visiting my family, and every summer there is no problem. He told me, no, in Canada we have three kind of lists. We have the A list, it's for pedophiles. The B list, it's for serial killers. And the C list, It's for presumed terrorists, and you are in this list. And the C, the last one, presumed terrorists. Presumed terrorists? I couldn't believe it. I'm talking about 2000, before 9/11. So I told him, who puts me in this list? He told me, I cannot tell you. You have to call Transport Canada. I told him, Transport Canada is not it's not the police, it's not the RCMP. He told me, but this list, it's géré, it's managed by Transport Canada. So because I'm really têtu, I took the plane and I went to Morocco. And when I arrived there, they didn't arrest me, but I was waiting in the airport for 2-3 hours, and they checked my passport, my luggage, everything. And I have one of my family members, my uncle, working in the airport. So he met with the security there. And they told him, 4 o'clock morning, we received a call from Ottawa telling us the most dangerous terrorist is coming to Morocco. So perhaps because at this time, Moroccan government didn't trust them. They didn't arrest me. They checked my luggage and they released me. But I was followed everywhere by a car and two men. After my this trip, I was returning from Morocco to Montreal, and I did a transit in JFK Airport, New York. During this trip, one old lady from Morocco asked me to change my seats with her. She told me, my dear son, I have to use the bathroom every 30 minutes. Can we change? I told her, no problem. So I changed with my wife, and I let her sit in my seats. During the transit, the SWAT team, FBI, immigration agents, came in the plane with M16, with weapons, and they went directly to the old lady, asking her to follow them. The problem, the old lady, I'm not joking, it's incredible. She couldn't talk English. She couldn't speak French. So she was watching them, and the SWAT team was shouting and screaming, Sharkawi, and the message, Sharkawi, follow us. So the lady was telling them, je ne comprends pas, I don't understand. So I told them, I'm Sharkawi. So all the weapons were toward me. Handcuffed, they put me in the basement of the airport for hours. They switch off the lights, and time to time, a big guy from the security was threatening me like this. And they switch off the lights, they ask my wife to walk, and they put like a trail on the small window of the cell so I could see my wife walking, and I was mad. Will they took out her hijab? Will they took out her clothes? I was screaming, beating the door. Nobody answered. I was waiting for hours. In the end, the FBI agent came to me and he told me, we are going to do an interrogation with you. And so I told him, look, I don't speak English. I need a translator. And believe me, I was really, I think, smart at this time to do it. Because when I was released, for example, in 2005, one journalist of CBC asked me for an interview. I said, no problem. And the first question was, Mr. Sharkawi, do you have any support in Canada? I told him, yes, I have a lot of support. There is many militants with me. He told me, militants? I see. Because in French, militant means activist. At this. But with the FBI agent, I told him, I need a translator. So they brought to me a translator from IT. And the guy was horrible. He was mixing things. And I was talking in the past or in the conditional. He was translating in the future, and I couldn't correct. Imagine if I told them he's doing mistakes. It means I'm lying. So I was listening to him doing mistakes, and I couldn't correct. And they were recording, writing, taking notes, and it was incredible. The first question was, Mr. Sharkawi, why are you here? I said, why I'm here? Because you arrested me. Suddenly, Mr. Sharkawi, why are you here? I said, I don't know. You don't know? I said, but you arrested me from the plane. I was going to Montreal, and I'm a American citizen. I'm a landed immigrant in Canada. My father is Canadian. My mother told me, no. Look, we are very responsible agency. We are defending national security of United States, and we are defending Americans. We are not losing, wasting time and money for nothing. Why are you here? And I'm French literature teacher. So I have read before Kafka, Le Procès, The Trial. So he was asking me, so I told him, I don't know, perhaps I did something bad. Did something bad, for example. I said, perhaps I was stupid. One day I said F word to America. So you're against America. I said, no. I'm not saying I'm against America. I said, perhaps I did a mistake. What kind of mistake? Perhaps one day I was stupid. I said F word to Israel. Okay, so you're against Israel. I'm not telling you I'm against Israel. I'm just telling you. But what about Palestine? Okay, problems start now. Is it occupation there? I say, the United Nations call it occupied territories. So, okay, this is the United Nations, but you, do you think it's an occupation? Yes, it's an occupation. And the groups fighting Israel, Hamas and those groups, are they terrorist group or resistance? Can I talk to my lawyer? No. Mr. Sharkawi, why are you here? I don't know. No, we are asking you. Perhaps I was giving martial arts to some Arabs and Muslims. I'm martial arts teacher. Okay, you're training Arabs. No, I'm not training Arabs and Muslims. I'm doing courses, I'm taking money. Okay, so they are paying you to train them. It's incredible. How can you defend yourself in such, and the worst is telling me, look, you are United States, you are foreigner. We can detain you indefinitely. I will give you a pen and pages, and you are going to do a brainstorming. Brainstorming, yes, brainstorming. All the Arabic names of young people between 18 and 45 you met in Montreal, and he starts giving me names of the mosques and university, Concord University, Université de Montréal, McGill. You know them? Give me names. Why? You can contact the Canadian government. They will give you all the names. No. I want the names you have in your memory. But it's really scary. I told him, look, perhaps a stupid guy give you my names. I'm not going to give you those names. It's not responsible to give you names of people. When I was arrested in 2003, FBI sent a report saying that Mr. Sharkawi was not cooperating with us. He was lying. Because I refused to give names of people, innocent people, just like this. So he started with me since the beginning. He told me, look, we want all your life since the beginning. 1973, 3rd July, you're born. Okay. Excellent. Tell me your friend in the
kindergarten.
La garderie.
Or the daycare.
Daycare. My friend in daycare. He started giving me names of my neighbors. It's incredible. So, in the university in Morocco, your friend, leftist, Islamist, all those groups, all those people, all those students. And one time I was really happy at this time. Believe me, I was happy. I told him, look, you know everything about me. Even the blockbusters movies I was renting in Montreal. So you know that I'm innocent. He told me, Mr. Sharkawi, we're not joking. Why are you here? The same question. And I was repeating with him the same questions one second. In the end, I was really tired. I didn't sleep all the... In the end, these agents, I told him, look, you look like Jim Carrey. So he starts laughing, and we start talking together. And he was, I think, sincere with me. He told me, look, here in America, we have nothing against you. You have problem with Ottawa. Go there and resolve your problems with the Canadian government. It was in 2001, February 2000, before 9/11. I arrived in Morocco, in Montreal with my wife. I went everywhere. I'm Miss International. I want to see some Muslim association, Arabic association. Nobody helped me. Nobody. I want to see the legal aid. I told them, look, I need a lawyer to defend me. They told me, but you're not detained. Yeah, I know, I'm free. You're not accused. I'm not accused. We cannot defend you. Legal aid is for people who are in jail or arrested, and you're free. And I couldn't pay for a lawyer. So I didn't do anything at this time. I couldn't. And sometimes after, my mother received a call. It was from the federal government. And they asked me to call them. I called them, and we did a meeting in the building of Immigration and Citizenship Canada. And the two gentlemen from CSIS, first meeting with them, they told me, we want to meet with you to discuss about your citizenship. Because your father and your mother, your sister, everybody got the citizenship, and you're the only one waiting. I said, yes. So we sent you before a book. You have to read this book and to learn it. And to learn, oh, Canada, you know, all this stuff. I told him, yes, no problem. I read this many times. I'm waiting. So I'm still waiting now, 10 years after. So they told me, we want to ask you some question. I went to meet with them in this building. They asked me about Saddam Hussein. They asked me about Palestine. The same stupid questions. Look, I'm not in the Middle East. I'm from Morocco. Morocco is North Africa. I never went to the Middle East, one. Two, I came to this country. I was young with my family. And why are you asking me those questions? You just want to know your opinion, Mr. Sharkawi. Are you loyal to the Queen? Sorry, the Queen? Yes, you want to become Canadian. So you have to be loyal to the Queen. Did you ask this question to the Quebecers? It was the first meeting, so they scared me in New York, and they did to me this interview. Second meeting, third meeting. So I was really tired to answer the same question, and slowly they started showing me pictures of young Muslims in Montreal. In Montreal, we have a big Muslim community, more than 200,000. So they started showing me pictures of people I knew, I didn't. So, you know, it's really difficult. They show you somebody, you met with him one time, perhaps, playing soccer or in the mosque, university. So if you tell them, I knew him, it's a contact. I don't know him. Okay, you have pictures. So it's, for example, I knew Tracy. I just met with her. But I don't know nothing about Tracy. But she was calling me in my cell phone in Victoria. She's my contact. And I'm her contact. But I don't know her, sincerely. The first time we met together, this is a contact for them. So now she's my contact. 3 days after 9/11, I received two gentlemen in my restaurant. Because what I didn't tell you, when I was when I returned from Morocco and from United States, I felt that I was followed everywhere. And you know, our CSIS agents are really smart. In winter, you just open your window, you see two guys in a car with the lights on. It's very cold in Quebec, you know, minus 40. So, and in the summer, it's too hot. So just open the window and you can see two guys in a car with lights on. It's very hot, air conditioning. So you can see them. It's easy. And they were following me everywhere. And before I saw them, they were showing my picture to lots of my friends. So I started losing friends. And nobody told me that two officers or two CSIS agents were showing them my pictures. Nobody talked to me. I started also losing jobs. The school didn't renew my contract. the gym, martial arts gym, when I was giving courses, didn't renew my class. So I was losing jobs, friends, and I felt that I was isolated from the society. But I did some. I didn't have any evidence, and I was really naive to think that because my parents, my family are Canadian, and I will become Canadian, so I'm protected like all of you. So 3 days after 9/11, I opened at this time a restaurant because I couldn't work with my father. I was doing a master's degree part time, and I received a visit of two gentlemen. The first question they asked me, 3 days after 9/11, "Hi, Mr. Shakawi, hi, are you okay?" "Yes." "Where is Mr. Osama bin Laden?" God. The first question, and it was rush hour. I was working near Lester B. Pearson School, lots of students coming, taking slices of pizza. I was running everywhere, it was hot. And the first question they asked me, I told them, "Are you joking?" "No, no, it's Mr. Shakawi. Where is Mr. Osama bin Laden?" I cannot believe it. He's not smiling, he's not joking, he's serious. Sorry, I told him, he's running mountain to mountain in Tora Bora, Afghanistan, so he's really tired and he's having a siesta in my basement, so please don't disturb him, let him sleep. No, it's absurdity. I stopped meeting with them, because I felt that it was not really serious what they are doing. And they have written in the federal court that I was not collaborating. I told them that I'm not going to collaborate with you. I don't know what they mean by collaboration. To be snitch on my own community? To give names of people? To tell them that this guy is dangerous, this guy is not dangerous? How can I say that? It's insane. 2 years after, I was driving my wife, and I was really weak in this moment. My father was driving his car, and he did an accident. My mother was injured, and my wife broke her pelvis, and she was pregnant. So I was taking care to her. She was in a chair, so she couldn't move. She couldn't have a bath. I was really taking care of her, and all my family was injured. It was my situation. I was really weak at this time. Lots of problems. I sold the restaurant, it was not working. And I was fed up. I told all my friends, my teachers in the University of Montreal, "I'm going to return to Morocco. Definitely, I'm not going to stay here. I'm disgusted by those people." So at this moment, in Morocco, it was a big bombing in Casablanca. It was in 2003. And the Moroccan government arrested 5,000 people on suspicion. The Islamists, the communists, all ists, feminists, leftists, all it is finished by is they arrested them. And the first week, 18 death penalty. 18 condamnations à mort. 18 people were condemned to death penalty the first week. More than 20 or 30 life sentence. It was a huge arrestation in Morocco. 5 days after, I was driving my car to go to University of Montreal, a police car followed me. They asked me to stop. I stopped. They told me, "Open the trunk." I went to open the trunk, and they ran away. I was calling them, "Sir, sir, sir." I was surrounded by RCMP, Sûreté du Québec, Police de Montréal, Agence Service Frontalier, many services with weapons. And they told me, "If you move, we are going to shoot you." Okay, handcuffed again, a car, directly to RDP jail, 21 months in small cell. All what they give me, it's a page, and they have written in this page. This document was a security certificate signed by two ministers, Denis Coderre, our neighbor, he just living in the next street, he knew my father, Denis Coderre from the Liberal Party, and Wayne Easter, Solicitor General. In this page, it was written, "Le Service Secret Canadien, CSIS, has grounds to believe that Mr. Sharkawi was, or he is, or he will be, dangerous for national security. CSIS has grounds to believe that Mr. Sharkawi was, or he is, or he will be engaged in terrorism. CSIS has grounds to believe that Mr. Sharkawi was, or he is, or he will be a member of Al-Qaeda. When I went to jail, I told them, where are we going? They told me, to jail. I told them, but why? They told me, we are going to deport you in 48 hours to your country. I told them, did I do something wrong or bad? They told me, no, we have a special law and you have right to deport you. You're a foreigner. I told them, I'm a foreigner. My parents are Canadian. My children are Canadians. I'm living in this country half of my life. You're telling me I'm a foreigner? They told me, yes, you're a foreigner. You're going to... Okay, but why are you going to put me in jail if I'm not a criminal? You see, you told me it's an immigration law. You have to put me in an immigration center, not in jail. They threw me in the jail. I will never forget this moment. I entered the first wing, G1. I saw four guys, big guys with tattoos, playing cards. The TV was on. I saw Osama bin Laden in a black horse after Osama bin Laden shooting. And the journalists were saying, today in Montreal, we arrested Adi Sharkawi. They were talking about me and showing bin Laden the 9/11 events. It was incredible. I couldn't believe it. And the guard called me. Mr. Adi Sharkawi, please, venez à la guérite. So all the guys were looking to me. This is the guy. This is the problems. It's why the border is closed now. No marijuana, no weapons from the United States. Okay, this is the guy, the problem, the source of all those problems. I want to see him. I say, pourquoi vous m'appelez? What's the problem? He told me, we just want to tell you, Mr. Sharkawi, that your cell, it's 212B. I said, sorry, 212B, I know to read, I can read. Thank you. So I said, okay, I said, now problems will start. I went to my cell, I put the pillow, the cover, and I went to use the bathroom. So somebody was following me. I said, okay, now I have to perhaps use my karate skills. And so the guy was following me. I told him, what's your problem, man? He told me, sir, I want an autograph. Autograph? Yes, you're the guy I saw on TV, in CTV, in CBC, talking about you with people of 9/11. Are you crazy, man, or what? Autograph? So he insisted, so I wrote for him, good luck from an innocent man, Adi Sharkawi. I will not talk too much about the jail. Wow, I just started in 25 minutes. Okay, so I will go fast. I will tell you that my experience in jail. Now I'm joking, I'm talking to you, I'm laughing, but I have written a poem during my experience in jail, and the jail for me, it's the worst thing you can have in jail is the glass. You know the glass? La vitre. People in Guantanamo, they don't see their families. They know that their families are far. But in my situation, I saw my family 3 times a week, but I couldn't touch them. And this, it's really killing you. You see people you love just near you, but you cannot touch them. They're not far. They're really close. You cannot touch them. And I couldn't take in my hands my son, because my wife was pregnant at this time. And she showed me my son behind the glass. And believe me, it's killing you every time. And when the state allow you to meet with your family, what they call visit contact, you have to sit in a table like this. You're sitting here, they're sitting there. And you have two guards watching you, camera, micros in the table, and they call it contact visit. What contact visit? And they insisted, Mr. Shakawi, you don't have a right to kiss or to touch. Okay, you are Muslim. We don't touch each other in public. And they are insisting, okay, my children, you cannot touch. This is contact visit in jail. There is also something very important. After 6 months, I became member of the committee. You know, in every wing, there is a committee. 5-6 people ruling the wing. And the new people have to ask you permission to switch on TV or take coffee or to use phone. And with time, I had the feeling that I was changing. I start talking like bikers, like they put me with bikers, Hells Angels. They put me with the Blood and Crips. I'm not white, I'm not black, so they put me with whites, with blacks. I was CDP, Boga. They put me everywhere. So when I was member of the committee, I felt that I was changing. I start talking like criminals. Yo, man, what you want? I'm not like this. And you started having a different behavior. You're talking with your wife. She's talking about milk, about your children, and the guy telling you, prepare yourself, big bottle. Okay, you know, it's not you, it's not me, but you have to survive. And in jail, you have to become a lion, a wolf. You cannot be sheep. So, and this also killing you. You don't want to change. You're not criminal, but they force you to change. And you start having another behavior, another language. And I will tell you that this experience in jail perhaps was easier for me because I was in Quebec. I kept my clothes, not like, for example, the four other men in Ontario, orange suit and isolation. So it's really different. But even if the conditions are not very hard like Ontario, I will tell you, just 1 hour, if you're innocent in jail, it's... You can never be retribué.
They won't give you anything in return.
Yeah, you cannot even if they give you all the money of the world, it's not 1 hour if you're innocent in jail. Because if you never did something bad, you don't deserve to be in jail. And imagine if you're innocent. I will tell you something, perhaps one anecdote in jail. I met one guy from Ontario. His name Airborne. This guy was paid by the bikers 2 packages of cigarettes every week to kill mosquitoes. You know, people, respectable people like bikers, they are playing cars. They don't want to be disturbed by mosquitoes. So they pay this guy every week 2 packages of cigarettes. He was just killing mosquitoes every day. So one day I found him opening the door of the yard. I said, what are you doing, man? You're opening the door? He told me, yes. I said, but there is lots of mosquitoes entering. He told me, I have to survive. Okay. I have to smoke. And when I was released, I was listening to Jim Judd, head of CSIS, repeating the same discourse every year. Yes, in Canada, we are defending national security. We arrested Adi Shakawi, Muhammad Harkat. The same names every year. $9 billion, the budget of national security in Canada. Okay? Killing mosquitoes. If there's no mosquitoes, they will create them.
They
pay the
mosquito
themselves. I don't know. I have 2 security certificates. I don't need the third one. So, I just want to tell you that after this experience in jail, during 21 months, I decided not to participate in such a parody. I was not testifying in the court, I was not participating. And when the judge, Simon Noel of the Federal Court, noticed that I was not participating, he told me, if you testify, I will release you. But between you and me, I didn't trust it. I didn't trust the federal court, not the system at this time. So I did a lie detector polygraph. I did it 4 times and I passed it 4 times. And we picked the best expert. He was working for the RCMP, informed by the FBI. We took the result and we sent it to 2 independent experts and they confirmed that I was not lying. I'm not terrorist. We took those results and I testified to the judge, and I explained to him. I told him the truth. You know what they told? They give me, when I was arrested, 1 week after, 400 pages. In those 400 pages, the government was, CSIS actually, was they put some biographies of Osama bin Laden, speeches of Saddam Hussein, the list of all terrorist group, how to escape from surveillance, how to build the bombs. Lots of crazy things, but nothing about me. Except 14 pages. In those 14 pages, they were talking about the profile, my profile. Saying that Sharkawi fits a profile of sleeper agents. And this profile is based on 8 points. The first one, he's Arab and Muslim. The second one, he's young. The third one, he's educated. He's doing a master's degree and wants to do his PhD. Number four, he's coming from the middle class. Osama bin Laden, Ayman Zawahiri, all those people are not poor. They are from the middle class. So they're not just working to eat, but to cherish the government, subversion. Number five, he has a restaurant, he can finance terrorism. Number six, it's incredible, profiling. Number six, he's married and he has children. Number seven, he's martial arts expert. Number eight, he did a trip to Pakistan. This is my profile. I was arrested because I fit the profile of sleeper agents. So I explained to the judge that he cannot, those people, CSIS, I mean, they didn't tell him the truth. When they told him that I was a martial arts expert and I was doing karate like the 19 men of 9/11, I told him, look, I started martial arts, I was 11 years old. Am I preparing myself to commit an attentat, an attack, since I was 11 years old? Second, they told you, I'm married to have a cover. I told him, my wife, I knew her since 1990. She was my neighbor. Actually, she was my teacher in Morocco. It was a love story. And we have two children, and we want more. And it's more than 10 years of marriage. Now it's 11 years. At this time, it was perhaps 5 years. And third, they told you that I was in Pakistan. Yes, I was in Pakistan, but I was in Pakistan, in Turkey, in Egypt, in France, in Belgium, in Spain, United States. I stopped telling him all the countries I have visited. Why? They just told you he was in Pakistan. Point. And my lawyer did a fantastic job. We found when I was in jail that this profiling of terrorists was the consequences of the work of one man. His name is Mark Salzman. Mark Salzman was a former CIA agent. He was helping what Reagan was calling the freedom fighters to fight communism in Afghanistan. So when he finished his dirty work financing those people to beat communists, he returned to the United States and he did his PhD in psychiatry. And he wrote a book about the profile of Mujahideen for every region of the world, North Africa, Middle East, South Asia. And what CSIS did, they took this profile and they applied it on me, the profile of Mujahideen of North Africa, Maghreb. And my lawyer told the judge, you cannot rely on such a profile. It's not scientific. For example, if they arrest him because he's rich, okay, and if he's rich, he can finance terrorism, but if he's poor, he can be bought by money. Okay, you are arresting him because he's educated. And if he has no instruction, no education, he can be brainwashed in madrasas in Pakistan. It's easy to brainwash him. Okay, you're saying that you arrested him because he's married and he's a cover. Okay, if he's single, he will be candidate to martyr. So anyway, you're losing. You cannot win with profiling. And the judge released me at this time in 2005. With draconian conditions, 50,000 bell, GPS device. I can show it to you. With this satellite device, so I'm followed everywhere. I have another big brother at home connected to my phone line. So three tools for big brother. They have right to enter my, at this time, they had right to enter my house without warrants anytime. I cannot go outside the island of Montreal. No internet, no PCs, no cell phone. My father and my mother had to supervise me everywhere. I'm teacher. I was teaching after my release in my classroom, teaching teenagers, 18 years old, and my mother sitting in the back of the classroom supervising me. Believe me, it's incredible. The teenagers, the students were playing in the yard. I'm supervising them, and my mother supervising me during 4 years. In 2007, the Supreme Court of Canada decided in Sharkawi 1 that secure certificates are unconstitutional. It was a big victory for me, for all immigrants, for all Canadians. But unfortunately, the Conservative government didn't apply this decision, and they just introduced the same law, C3. I went to the parliament in front of the Committee of Justice, and I told them that this law is unconstitutional. I went to see in front of the Senate, the Committee of Public Safety of the Senate. I told them the same thing. We were 90 interveners, and nobody listened to us. And the Liberal Party, we did the demonstration in the riding of Stéphane Dion in Saint-Laurent. He met with us, and he told us, I'm scared that if I vote against this law, Stephen Harper will get the majority. And if he gets the majority, he will change Canada. So he voted for this law. In 2008, the Supreme Court of Canada ruled in another decision that CSIS doesn't have right to destroy evidence. It's incredible. I will just summarize this Supreme Court decision before finishing. We are sitting now talking. You are listening to me. And CSIS, before the Supreme Court asked them to change the law, perhaps they are recording. They will record these events. They will do a transcription of the tape. They will destroy the tape. They will take the transcription. They will make a summary of transcription. They will destroy the transcription. They will take the summary. They will give it to a senior agent. He will write what they call operational reports. He will destroy the summary. In this operational report, for example, they can write, Mr. Sharkawi was speaking against national security of Canada, and many people with names of some of them were sitting and listening to him, and they were supporting him in his extremist ideas, for example. So if they give it in the secret evidence, and I want to defend myself, I have no evidence to show that I was not talking against national security of Canada. But the judge who will see the secret evidence will absolutely trust the state agents, not me, the poor immigrants. So the Supreme Court of Canada was clear. You cannot destroy the tapes. But he says, at this time, their prosecutor told the Supreme Court of Canada, but we have two strong arguments. The first one, we are spying on lots of immigrants. Where can we put all those evidence? So the lawyer of Le Barreau du Québec, Maître Poupard, showed the nine judges a CD. They told them, you have this, a CD. Just put all those files in the CD. And the second argument was also crazy. They told the court, we didn't destroy just two interviews of Mr. Sharkawi. We are destroying everything. Because we have a policy, OPS 217. And this policy allows us to destroy all the tapes, the recording. It's incredible. So the nine judges told them, you have to change your policy. Their last argument, we are not spying on citizens, just on immigrants. But you know the problems. I'm immigrants, you're a citizen. They recorded everything. So it applies to you. So perhaps today it's me, tomorrow it will be you. Thank you.